News. Stand up! Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 18th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. We're now 35 days away to the opening ceremony for the Tokyo Olympics. Team Uganda will travel to Japan, hoping to break a 9-year absence from the Olympic medals podium. Stephen Kiprotich won the gold for Uganda in the men's marathon at the 2012 London Games. For Tokyo, the Ugandans are led by Joshua Cheptegei, the world record holder at both 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters. Joining us now from Kampala with a feature report on Uganda's Olympic medal chances is Magume Davis Rakawinj. Sporty greetings, Magume!
Sporty greetings to you, Sunny, and our listeners. The first batch of Ugandan athletes to the Japan Olympics was flagged off this Thursday by Hamson Obua, Uganda's sports minister. These are three boxers, Bombers captain Prince Shadil Musaboji, David Semuju, who fights in the middleweight category, and Uganda's first female boxer at the Olympics, Catherine Nanzili. Others are swimmer Ambala Atwaire and weightlifter Julius Sechitoleko. They'll be joined by at least 20 more athletes, mainly runners, including 5,000 and 10,000 world record holder Joshua Cheptegei. Sports analyst Darren Teyune says the many days of lockdown brought about as the result of COVID-19 pandemic will have a big impact on the performance of the athletes.
It's been very difficult for some Ugandan athletes to have races scheduled abroad as they normally do before the Olympic Games. You find countries that are supposed to organize some of the biggest preparation events have been hit by the coronavirus pandemic. But more importantly, there have been travel hitches for some of the athletes to go to specific places. You find in some of the areas there have been restrictions down to having a certain kind of vaccine for you to be able to be let into a country. You talk of different PCR tests that are done. And obviously, as much as athletes go through several tests before they compete at events.
That said, Cheyune is optimistic. Ugandan star runners, including team captain Joshua Cheptegei, will bag a medal or so at this year's Olympics. Leon Senyange, a sports analyst, agrees.
Joshua Cheptegei is on song for an Olympic gold, potentially making him the greatest athlete in Uganda. I still have a feeling that he could be upstaged by Jacob Kiplimo. The two, if they take part in the same race, maybe 5K, maybe 10K, it could be spring a surprise therein. So for me, that is where I see Uganda's medal coming from. Boxing, I think if our boxers can make it through probably to the next round, maybe the quarterfinals, that would be very significant progress. We haven't had a boxer get out of the first round in a very, very long time since the Athens Games.
Boxers have been promised with huge rewards by the local boxing body, Uganda Boxing Federation, or UBF, should they go past the first round. Sports reporter Aisha Nasanga is cautiously optimistic about Uganda's medal hopefuls.
If the Olympics had happened in 2020, I would stake my life, an arm, a leg, anything for Joshua Cheptegei to win a medal. Now, though, although he remains a favorite in my book, the thing, though, is a year is a pretty long time. Yes, in that year, he's gone on to break all these records in the different categories and all. But also, you've got to worry for a burnout. You know, a year is a pretty long time. So in terms of burnout, that's my only worry as well. But I think he remains a favorite for Team Uganda to win a medal, both in the 5,000 meters and the 10,000 meters, which he plans to do.
But reporter Cynthia Bekinachemera is more optimistic and says Uganda could have a surprise winner in one of the rare games in the country.
I'll give a plus to rowing. That is Catherine Noble. She's based in the U.S. We haven't pushed her so much, but she's been having the best training facilities. She's been getting all the time. So I think that is the surprise I anticipate at the Games.
Darren Cheyune says it would be unrealistic to ask much from the athletes, having been battered by the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic.
But I expect a joint team effort from especially the runners, because they constitute the biggest batch of the team at the Olympics. I think they will have to work together as a team to see some medals come through from the middle distance, that is Ronald Musagala, Winnie Nanyonda and Halima Nakai, to the long distance where there's Joshua Cheptegei in the 10,000 meters together with the World Half Marathon champion Jacob Kiplimo, and down to the marathon that has Stephen Kiprotich, Fred Musobo, and Felix Chemonges. I think that's where Uganda should be looking for the medals.
With the boxing team, the Bombers, having Catherine Nanzili as the first female Ugandan boxer to represent the country at the Olympics, the boxing team could punch above their weight and bag medals for Uganda. For the Sunday Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakaninje in Kampala, Uganda.
My name is Nesli Catherine. I am the first female boxer from Uganda that will represent my country at the Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm telling the parents out there and the girls who are interested in boxing that please, parents, support your daughters in any sport, anything they would like, so that you do be the first, you do help them with the first blessing for the game. And the girls out there, please be disciplined and fear God first, because in fearing God there is where you get the knowledge of everything and the blessings. And please be authentic to yourself, believe in yourself, and always keep in mind that everything is possible.
Thanks, Catherine, and good luck at the Tokyo Olympics. To find out about Egypt's preparations for the Tokyo Games, Iron Mike Imbonye called Cairo, where he reached the Secretary General of Egypt's National Olympic Committee, Sharif El Arian.
Team Egypt is getting ready. We have a lot of logistics that we need to finish with the clothing of the and the apparel of the team, the tickets, who is traveling when, a lot of things that are different in this Olympics than all previous Olympics due to the corona pandemic. We are arranging everything for everyone. As you said, most of the qualifications has ended by the 15th of June. We just have some athletics players, swimming players who still have a chance of getting qualified. As for the rest, we have 132 players, athletes, girls and boys who are qualified for the Olympics now from 24 different Olympic sports. That will be Team Egypt in Tokyo 2020.
Have you selected the final list of athletes and officials that will represent Team Egypt in Tokyo?
Yes, we have selected our final list of athletes, officials and coaches and team doctors and everyone who's going. And our first convoy, let's say, our first people traveling are on the 10th of July with the vice head of the delegation and some employees and the head doctor of the team. Our first game is football before the opening ceremony on the 22nd, and it's going to be against Spain in the group stage. Of course, 23rd of July is the opening ceremony.
Do you have any qualifying events or any injury worries amongst your athletes?
In any event, we do have some injuries in some combat sports and other sports like pentathlon, but we are working on them and trying to get our players ready for the Olympics. Thank you for congratulating us for the win of the Zamalek basketball team in Africa, winning the Champions League of clubs. It was a great result for that team. Also, we have the Ahli club, who's in the semifinals of the Champions League for football due to play against Esperanza from Tunisia. And we hope Ahli team does a good job also, as they are the championship cup holders from last year.
That's Sharif El Arian, the Secretary General of Egypt's National Olympic Committee. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Cairo, Egypt.
Yes, sporting greetings. This is three-time Olympian and Beijing 2008 Olympic medalist Chika Chukwumerijie. You're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Peter Clonte, the host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. And this is one of the stories we will be covering on Nightline Africa. The African Union launches an inquiry into allegations of human rights abuses in the Ethiopian conflict. Tune in, you will be glad you did, I guarantee.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Surfing is one of the sports that will be making its debut at the upcoming Tokyo Games. But some athletes have expressed concern that the smaller waves in Japan will fail to reach the heights of Olympic competition. VOA's Gwen Uten has more details for us. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Surfing's long-awaited Olympic debut will showcase world champions, veterans of the World Surf League, and rookie pros who are poised to make their mark on the sport. The athletes deal with a wide range of conditions in oceans across the globe, but at Tsurugazaki Beach, the surfing venue for the Tokyo Games, waves are typically smaller during the summer months, and that has raised some concerns among competitors like surfer Gabriel Medina. In 2014, Medina made history by becoming the first Brazilian surfing world champion, and he tells Reuters News waves that are too short and lacking in power could make the Olympic competition a little bit tricky.
The whole world is gonna be watching us. It's pretty big for this sport, and it's gonna be a tricky one, you know, because the waves in Japan, it's kind of hard, you know, like small and funky. So, but I mean, if you wanna be the best, you gotta do everything in any condition.
One piece of technology that has been making waves in recent years is the artificial surf pool that can create almost identical and perfect waves on demand. And the anticipated lackluster surf in Japan has many wondering if Olympic organizers should trade the natural beach for artificial technology. Australian Stephanie Gilmore is a 7-time world champion and the most decorated female surfer in the sport. Gilmore likes the idea of a surf pool that she says will give competitors an equal opportunity to ride the best waves.
Not everyone gets an equal chance in the ocean, so a wave pool made sense that we get the same opportunity as each other, and it comes down to your performance on the wave, and that's it.
20 male and 20 female athletes will compete in 3 rounds and 3 finals at the upcoming games. They will be judged on levels of type and difficulty, including big turns and aerials, for a score between 0 and 10. Wave technology didn't exist back in 2015 when the sport was invited to apply for the Tokyo Games. International Surfing Association President Fernando Aguirre says at that time he was told the competition must be held in the ocean, but he was assured that the location will give surfers the right amount of swell for the optimal ride.
The place is known for being exposed to the right swells at this time of the year. It's a very consistent. It has hosted international competitions, Japanese national championships. So we were very confident. Besides that, we have, you know, as we approach, let's say, the week before the game start, we have a meteorologist and surf forecasters, both from Japan and from the US that we've been working with for many years. And we have, because of the conditions in Japan, within 72 hours before a certain day, we know exactly how the surf is coming.
Like Stephanie Gilmore, world champion surfer Sally Fitzgibbons also hails from Australia, a continent that boasts some of the best surfing beaches in the world. But Fitzgibbons says she's had to adjust her style on much smaller waves ahead of her trip to Tokyo.
Oh, the Olympics, I think, will all be about like atmosphere and obviously very technical surfing in small waves. I've been, you know, working really hard on it and really pride myself with my small wave surfing. That's where kind of my origins lie. So, yeah, hopefully I can bring out what I've been training and training for and, yeah, bring out the big maneuvers.
And despite her initial desire to compete in a wave pool, Stephanie Gilmore says nothing beats the magic of the ocean.
Has beautiful beaches and they really want to show surfing in its most authentic form. So once I thought about it that way, I was like, yeah, no, I like the idea of having surfing in the ocean.
The sport of surfing is set to make its Olympic debut in a matter of weeks on July 25th. And then get ready for the 2024 Paris Games when the surfing competition will return on the French island of Tahiti. And that is all from me, Sunny.
Thanks, Gwen, and have a nice weekend. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Sport greetings, everyone. This is Falilat Ogukoya, Olympic silver and bronze medalist, African record holder, ran the best quarter-miler in the world, 1998. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the latest top stories of the week, including President Biden's European trip and his first face-to-face meeting with Russian leader Vladimir Putin in Geneva. Listen to Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday from the Voice of America.
Thanks, Kim. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In National Basketball Association playoff action Thursday night, the Milwaukee Bucks beat the visiting Brooklyn Nets by 15 points to force a decisive Game 7 in their second round series. The AP's Chuck Freeman reports from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
The season was on the line for the Bucks, and they came through and forced a Game 7 by beating the Nets 104-89. It was a wire-to-wire win for the Bucks, fending off several runs made throughout the second half. They were led by Chris Middleton's playoff career-high 38 points. Middleton says the Bucks never felt any anxiety.
Don't think about any type of pressure at all. I mean, it's a basketball game. You know, as simple as that. I mean, I know it's lose or you go home, but at the same time, it's just basketball.
Middleton kept hitting shots in the second half, keeping the Nets at bay. Middleton was 11 of 16 from the field. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 30 points.
We're built for this moment, simple as that. And nobody says it's going to be easy. Might be hard, but we are capable of doing it, you know. So everybody's mindset was, everybody had a great mindset, and everybody, you know, came to play, came to compete.
Kevin Durant had 32 for the Nets. Game 7 is Saturday night in Brooklyn. Chuck Freeman, Milwaukee.
Thanks, Chuck. The winner of the Nets-Bucks series will play the winner of the Atlanta Hawks-Philadelphia 76ers series in the Eastern Conference Finals. Atlanta will host Philadelphia later Friday night. It's must win for the 76ers, who trail in the series 3-2. Out west, the Los Angeles Clippers will host the Utah Jazz in Game 6 of their series. The Clippers lead 3-2, so they'll be looking to advance on their home court at the Staples Center Arena in Los Angeles. The winner of the Clippers-Jazz series will play the Phoenix Suns in the Western Conference Finals. The Suns are getting a nice rest after sweeping the Denver Nuggets 4-0 in the second round of the NBA playoffs.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Samson Omale joins us once again with another extra spicy package of African sports news. Sporty Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you, Sunny. We begin the wrap of this weekend's African sports action with the first leg of the continent's elite football club competition, the CAF Champions League. Esperance de Tunis will host defending champions Al Hockley at the Stade Olympique de Raids on Saturday. The Tunisians booked the sport in the final four with a penalty shootout win over CL Belouizdad after the two-legged tie ended in a 2-2 draw on aggregate. Since 2010, Esperance have reached the CAF Champions League final on five occasions, winning it three times, including back-to-back titles in 2018 and 2019. Al Hockley kept their hopes of a 10th Champions League trophy alive with a 3-1 aggregate win over Mamelodi Sundowns to mark their 17th semi-final appearance in the competition. The second semi-finals fixture late Saturday evening is between South Africa's surprise team at this stage of the Champions League, Kaizer Chiefs, and two-time Champions League winners Wydad Casablanca of Morocco. The match is scheduled for the Stade Mohamed V. To preview this match, I spoke with Nigeria's veteran sport historian, Jerry Udo. I began by asking him what he makes of the semi-final appearance.
I'm aware that Al Ahly are the record winners of the competition with 9 titles. Of course, on paper, they are the favorite to win this one. But ES Tunis also is not a pushover because, as far as they are concerned, also in the continent, they've also won the CAF Champions League in the past. And of course, knowing that they are coming against the defending champions, they will definitely come out with something very, very tangible. So it's going to be a very, very interesting encounter between the two teams. Pitso Masumane, the Al Ahly coach, wants to win it for the first time. He has done so with South African side Mamelodi Sundowns. So he wants to do it also with the Egyptian side to prove his mettle.
Let's look at the second one. You have Kaizer Chiefs versus Wydad FC. This is the first time Kaizer Chiefs is getting to the semi-finals, so this stage of the competition in their history. Do you think they'll be able to pull up against Wydad FC?
This is even the first time they are even reaching the group stages of the competition. Of course, in South Africa, they are the record winners of the South African Premier League. They've won it more than any other team, even Mamelodi Sundowns. They were founded the same year in 1970 with Sundowns. Being the first time, most people did not give them any chance of coming this far. But you know that South African football has come of age, at least at club level. They are well organized and they are also well funded. And then, of course, they are well managed. And so I'm not surprised that they've really gotten this far. But of course, against the Wydad Athletic Club of Morocco, who are also the record Moroccan League champions. I think they've won the Moroccan League about 20 or something times. So they are the record champions of Moroccan football. And they've also won the CAF Champions League, I think, twice or so in the past. So that makes it a very, very interesting one. Many may say on paper, Wydad Athletic Club are favored because Kaizer Chiefs don't have the experience of playing at this level. But for a team that got this particular stage of the competition, having one more shot to get to the final should not be something too difficult for them. So it's going to be a very closely knitted semi-final tie between Wydad Athletic Club and Kaizer Chiefs.
Staying with CAF, the continent's football ruling body has insisted that the African Cup of Nations will take place as planned in Cameroon in January 2022. CAF Secretary General Veron Musengo Omba dismissed rumors that Cameroon could once more be stripped of hosting the continent's biggest sporting competition by the Confederation of African Football, as it was the case in 2019. After a two-day visit to the Central African country, Veron Musengo Omba also assured that the draws for the competition will hold in August.
The draw will take place from the 1st and mid-August. AFCON will be organized in this country in January. CAF President Mr. Dr. Motsepe and his executive, one of the members is in my left here, they are satisfying the way that the job is doing here in order to deliver the best ever AFCON in this continent.
For their part, FACAFOOT's interim president, Seido Mumba Njoya, gave assurances that plans are well on course to host Africa's biggest sporting spectacle come January 2022.
Oh, the commitment of my VP and the Federation, the commitment of the minister, everybody, they are committed to deliver this. All this, I said that.
And my colleagues are calling me. He said, you have too much stadium. Where can we organize this? In Douala, in Nimbe, or... I said, you're welcome.
And on to women's football. One of the most successful women national football team on the African continent, the Super Falcons of Nigeria, were part of the 2021 Summer Series, which had Portugal, Jamaica, and host United States participating, which ended on Wednesday. The Super Falcons opened the series with a 1-0 loss to Jamaica, pulled out a 3-3 draw with Portugal and lost their final game 2-0 to the United States women national team. Among the Super Falcons players are siblings Toyin and Nicole Payne. The pair became the first set of sisters to play together for the Nigerian women's national team and only the second set of sisters after Eberechi and Ugochi Okpara to represent the country. Toni Payne turned out to be one of the revelations for the Nigerian side during the series. She speaks on playing alongside her sister for the Nigerian national women's team.
Yeah, me and Nicole have grown up together, training together. So on the field, it felt really natural. But being able to stand next to her on the field, run next to her on the field in such a big stadium and wearing the Nigerian jersey was a big deal. And it felt almost not real at first, but it also felt pretty natural and second nature. Yeah, not a lot of teams get the opportunity to play in tournaments like this, and especially against USA, the best in the world. They've won the world championship, so I see it as an opportunity for us to compete and get better, to grow, and I think we all have confidence that we can win, and we're just focusing on what individual efforts we can put in, and also as a team, how we can work together, build, grow, and improve as a team. So we're all really excited. It's just another opportunity.
The 26-year-old Alabama-born Toni also had the opportunity to wear the captain's armband, an opportunity she never saw coming.
When she handed it to me, I said, "Oh, who do I give it to?" And then she said, "Just wear it." And so for me, it was like a shock. But it was a really high-intensity game, high-action moment, so I just put it on and just kept playing. And it's obviously a really big deal and a really nice honor to be able to wear a captain band at some point in your career, especially for a national team. So it was an honor. And even though it might have happened by accident, but it was still a really good feeling for me.
Nigeria is by far the most successful women's national team in Africa, having won the continental title 11 times and appeared in every Women's World Cup ever contested, as well as 3 Olympic Games.
Sporty greetings. This is Randy Waldrum, coach of the Super Falcons of Nigeria. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
And now to handball news. The final of the 24th edition of the African Handball Confederation Women's African Championship will take place today. Host Cameroon will be hoping to win its first ever continental trophy when they face defending champions Angola, who are vying for their third consecutive title and their 14th in 17 CAHB Women's African Championships. Cameroon have never won the title, having settled for bronze and silver 3 times each. In basketball news, FIBA Africa has announced that Kenya will host the Zone 5 AfroBasket qualifiers for women in Nairobi from July 26th to July 31st. This was after Egypt, the initial host, pulled out of hosting the zonal qualifiers. Kenya was picked ahead of Rwanda to host the event, as Kenya Basketball Federation officials say they are already talking to the government to ensure the tournament is held in Nairobi despite a strict COVID-19 measure the government has put in place. Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, South Sudan, Burundi, and Tanzania will take part in events whose winners will represent the region at the FIBA AfroBasket Championship for Women in Cameroon in September. And now to Olympic news. It's barely 35 days to the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games. While Kenya and Nigeria are holding trials for their athletes, the first group of Ugandan athletes and officials left for Japan on Friday. The team was sent off by Uganda's State Minister of Sport, Hamsin Obua, who told the contingent to be wary of COVID-19 protocols.
Avoid situations that will expose you. Because for COVID-19, this particular variant, whether you're vaccinated or not vaccinated, it infects. If you are vaccinated, the severity is lower than the one who is not vaccinated. So you have that comparative advantage. Respect and practice.
The one-month pre-games training camp for Team Uganda will allow the athletes to adjust to the climate and other conditions of Japan before the games get underway on the 23rd of July 2021. Beatrice Haikoru is the head of Team Uganda to the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games.
The second batch is scheduled to travel on the 29th and the 30th because the flights keep on changing. Either 29th or 30th, they'll go to Tadasina City. That's another city in Japan. So that team it will comprise of the middle distance athletes. That's now for athletics. Most of the other sports other than athletics have gone, but the remaining are now athletics team, apart from the rugby that is yet to qualify. They go via Doha up to Tokyo Narita. Then from Narita, they go to Izimisano. Our officials from the Uganda embassy in Tokyo are going to meet them in Osaka. They'll take them to Izimisano. So they will stay in the camp up to 20th of July when they'll go to the Olympic Games.
That's Beatrice Aikoru, the Secretary General of the Uganda Olympic Committee. And thanks to Samson Omale for that extra spicy African sports package. And that wraps up the June 18th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in and have a nice weekend. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports. Yes.